It's always good to come back to where you're from, St. Louis, where I grew up. See my cousins, Don, Alvin, Charles, my mother back there, my stepfather, my friends. And Arthur Brown was a great friend of mine, and he came to New York a couple of times and turned out a couple of parties that I took him to. Made everybody get high and everything. This first poem is a poem I like to read because it's about the river. And it's dedicated to my mother, who was here, Dorothy Marshall, and my father, Quincy Troup Sr., who is in California. And the poem is the name of my new book is coming out. The title poem is called Skulls Along the River. For my mother, Dorothy Marshall, and my father, Quincy Troup Sr. Up from New Orleans on riverboats, from the Gulf of Mexico, memory carries sweet legacy of niggerland speech, brown tongue bluesing, muddy water, underbottom spirits crawling, nightmares of shipwrecked bones, bones gone home to stone, to stone, bones gone home to stone, to stone, river bottomed, underbellied spirits, bones gone home to stone, I say, bones gone home to stone, I say, skulls along the river. And the faces of these faceless bones unknown, screaming arpeggios of stitched memory in cold light, cadences of blues, shrinking sun spray sprays, shrieking with every turning of black bone arm clocks. And it is the collected face of collected memory that wears the metaphor of collected dust. The collected mathematics of lamenting calibrations, hieroglyphics cracking and peeling and curling in stone, dust storms swirling around edges. Bones white as chiclet teeth in memory cloning, the images come locked in whatever, death there forever, forever locked in time, death there forever and forever locked in time. And we suffer because we must. There is no other way to find beauty. There is no other way to find love. We suffer because we must. There is no other way home to find the memory. And oh, the skeletons that have passed my cracking eyeballs, seeking true cadence within the lamenting calibrations of music, history rattling dice bone on their worn-out knees, the already dead scraping earth breath for an even deeper death, the ultimate transmissioning migration. And oh, you midnight men of peppermint moons, rooster claw soliloquies raking at vision's corner, heroes emerging from sand-blasted history books, grant me leather flesh of your weather-worn wisdom, O blood-drenched grave-diggers, anthrocytic soothsayers, O mellow prophets of crushed grapes and stomped berries, grant me holy syllables of your blues-laced tongues, perfect eardrums, grant me sacred light of your blues, grant me sacred light of your blues, doo-wopping Mac men, grant me holy flight of your eagle-wing light, oh, grant me the tongue of your blues, perfect eardrums, grant me holy flight of your eagle-wing life, grant me the tongue of your blues, perfect eardrums. Beginning now with the formless mystery of love, informing it all, cadences, its ritualized celebration of birth as death as drama, its copacetic language of blues, inside the journey back under buzzard wings of parody, textures realized and lost and found and lost once again, the slitting definitive answer of a pearl-handled razor, hissing through the dark's wailing wall, mystery flesh wallowing in its own gluttony inside the absent breath of death. Now hear the hieroglyphics of space and time forming, sculpting in winds from great distances, voices, shapes down way, way low, voices taking on colors, turning around and taking on shape, voices spinning and taping onto memory phonodisc, changing into blurring faces, swimming, trying to breach this calligraphy of space and time and distance, voices down way, way low, spinning themselves into memory phonodisc. Voices as faces, way, way low. Voices spinning, turning. Faces on memory phonodisc. Down, way, way low. Down, way, way low.
Send back now the memory further back than bone. See there now the polished stones lifted and singing, becoming birds that are words, their wings being the holy mist that fill up our lives with movement, movement now. Listen to the blood burning songs breaking through and into our river voice veins, climbing towards the plateau of the heart. Listen to the rains beating against the underbelly of those stones, marking worm-deep earth bottoms where the narcissus of flesh rests. Listen to wind tongues, drums now breaking into flames and wind trumpet songs, opening up doorways to rivers. Listen now to hearts. Listen to rhythms of stones, beating hearts climbing towards the dark. Listen to rhythms, your soon-to-be calcified worm-eaten heart. Listen now. I say listen now to the dark. We are the dark, our dark-stitched voices climbing memories from the heart, our secret arpeggios of spirit scaling towards the light, voices of weeping rains, teardrops hanging from history, eyelids of that tote squatting city by the Mississippi River, widespread arms of slippery catfish, deep inside skulls of Mississippi River nights, born of savage flights, our dark hip voices stitched into fabric of those razor-bladed nights. I say, blues kneeling down before that packing house city, widespread arms slippery as catfish, spirits climbing towards the cracks of moonbeams, slash lights, blues kneeling down, memories, moonbeams climbing towards cracks, slash light. Oh, sweet lovers of no faces, of all races, with desert bone, wide dry eyes of no reception, pain knee-deep in quicksand, who give sandpaper tongues of no sweetness, kisses cold as piranha teeth, eyes digging scaly reflections in dirty mirrors, cracked and fading, become now a confluence of rivers, blood, a confluence of musical faces swimming through sundown, blood, dusk, the sonorous magic of elliptical calibrations, blood, spinning inside memory discs, blood, stitched into music. Sing now of wing prints, birds climbing cadences, stitched memory. Sing now of rapture swimming through river veins, spirit of bones bright as lightning in blood mud deep beds of Mississippi river bottoms, where the ancestors sing now in sleep. Sing now a bone deep rhapsody, a memory of skulls blue steep. Sing now a stone sculptured legacy, blues chiseled mornings. Sing now, yeah, sing now. I say sing, sing a blues. But this road back, long gone, again, long gone, back again, blues. Long gone, I come back forward again to this river Mississippi, to this toad squatting city, catfish arms widespread and slippery welcome. Come back home again to these dry bone kisses of formaldehyde memories, eyes death written as 45 bullets. Come back home again, carrying my age strapped on my side like a revolver. All my young quicksilver years running into this river, Mississippi River, snake back carry of dreams and home is wherever ancestors' bones are buried. Knee-deep memories live as dreams, become rib cages of miracles, built from breath as a man holding the sun between his teeth, his smile a dazzling daybreak, a blue-black blues man, sun man caught the sun between his gap teeth, sprouted wings and flew away into the music. Now his spirit holds up the sky, his smile the golden eye, torching high, morning skies, snake back carry of dreams, Mississippi, 7-11 to win at the game of dice. I carry snake back river of dreams on my back, river Mississippi, where the spirits climb out of now, move beneath the arches, parabolic flight, upside down, question mark, razor's edge of a stationary pendulum slashing, the blue throat of sky turning now, a skillet fried yellow now, snake back carry of dreams, the song climbs out of itself, shaking river weeds that turn into faces, familiar on memory disc, spinning faces, familiar as crust coal dust, greets me here now, with outspread arms, filigreeing cobweb drapes, old streets, where familiar buildings have been once, removed now, like abscessed teeth from the mouth of that old fisherman ghoul who used to tell me all those great stories of the heydays of St. Louis before the scars came, before the mumbles came, and he lost his peg leg teeth like those abscessed buildings before he fell into senility and was pulverized by the pendulum wrecking ball of progress that is time, which is history's consuming fire, which is death and life at the same time. But this road that has been so long gone now is here again, back again, blues. Long gone, I have come back to this muddy river again, to this toad squatting city of catfish arms, widespread and slippery welcome. Come back home again to all my quicksilver memories running into this river, Mississippi River, snake back carrier of dreams, river, Mississippi, snake back carrier of dreams. 7 through 11, I win at the game of dice. 7 through 11, I win whatever the game holds for me now, whatever this catfish arms city holds for me now. I win if only I can come back and go forward again at the same time. 7 through 11, I win at the game of dice and the blues, snake back carry of dreams. 7 through 11, I win the blues. 7 through 11, I win the blues. I grew up on Delmore and Leonard, which is right down here, and I want to read these two. I want to read about 5 poems about St. Louis and read a few more about New York, where I live now, in Manhattan. And maybe you all will know about this, some of these places, and I'll just read them. Anyway, I grew up on Delmore and Leonard, and when I used to come out of my house, the Van de Venne Street packing house was over there. And when I would come out, you could smell the smell in the air of the packing house, burnt flesh in the air. So I wrote these two poems. They kind of work interchangeably. One is about the smell, and one is about a man, a mythic folkloric man who lived down the street from me and who had these sons and who used to beat up, and he was a packing house man. One is a blues poem, and one is introduced to the other one. First one is called South Central Van de Venne Street Rundown, and the other one is called Rivertown Packing House Blues. I won't even introduce them anymore. To leave any house was to smell the scent, burnt flesh scent hanging noxious in the air. And to leave any house was to know the order, burnt flesh hanging like death in the air. I say, burnt flesh hanging like death in the air. And to know the order was to know where death came from. Packing house, slaughterhouse, burning flesh blues, spreading the news about death, burning flesh, spreading the news about death. And can smell it in springtime, can smell it in summertime, can smell it 7 days a week, singeing air, in autumn time, in winter time, all the time, anytime, burnt flesh hanging as death in the air. I say, burnt flesh hanging as death in the air. Big Tom was a black nigger man, cold and black. I say Big Tom was a black nigger man, black steel flesh. Standing like a gladiator, soaked in animal blood, bits of flesh ringing wet. Standing at the center of death, buzzards hovering. Swinging his hammer called death, 260 work days. I say, swinging his hammer named death. Big Tom was a black packing house man, 30 years. I say Big Tom was a black packing house man, loved them years. And swang his hammer like old John Henry pounded nails. Swang that hammer 20 years, crushing skulls of cows and pigs, screaming fear. The man underneath slit their throats. 20 years, I say, the man underneath slit their throats. Big Tom was apprenticed for 10 long years, watching death. I said, Big Tom was apprenticed for 10 long years, smelling death, was helper to a fat white man who got slow, was helper to a fat white man who swung a hammer till he couldn't do it no more. So he taught Big Tom how to kill with a hammer. Yeah, he taught Big Tom how to kill. And 20 years of killing is a lot to bring home. I say, 20 years of killing is a lot to bring home, and drinking too much gin and whiskey can make a gentleman blow. Don't you know, I say, drinking too much gin and whiskey can make a good man show enough blow. Don't you know? Big Tom beat his wife after killing all day, his 6 chillin' too. I say, Tom beat his wife after killing all day, his young chillin' too. Beat him so awful bad, he beat him right out their shoes. Screaming blues, I say, he beat him so awful bad, he made a red-eyed, hungry alley rat spread the news about dues these black blues people was paying. Couldn't even bite him, cause of the dues these black blues people was paying. Big Tom killed 6 men, maimed a couple of hundred, and never served a day. I say, Big Tom killed 6 men, maimed a couple of hundred, never in jail one day. The figures, they could have been higher, but the smart ones, they ran away. I said, the number that was maimed or dead could have been higher, but the smart ones, they ran away. Swallowing pride, saved from the graveyard another day, the smart ones, they ran away. Big time working all day, 30 years, sweating heavy. Big time swinging his hammer, all right, 20 summers out of love. Big time killing for pay, 20 autumns out of need. Big time dealing out murders like a house man. All night in the pain yards out of false pride. Big time drinking heavy, laughing loose in taverns. Big time loose in black communities. Death fights, cancels light, and time, he just keep on stumbling. And 20 years of killing is too much to bring home to love. I say, 20 years of killing is too much to bring home to love. And drinking heavy gin and whiskey can make a strong man fall in mud. I say, drinking too much gin and whiskey can make a good man have bad blood. Don't you know? Can make a strong man have bad blood. Big Black Tom was a cold nigger man, strong and black. I say, Big Black Tom was a cold nigger man, hard steel flesh, and stood like a gladiator soaked in blood, bits of flesh soaking wet, stood at the center in the middle of death, sweating vultures, swinging his hammer called death. 260 work days, 20 years, like old John Henry, I say, swinging his hammer named death. This next poem is dedicated to my cousin Donald Troop, who is sitting here. And because we used to play basketball and football and do everything else that probably a lot of things we shouldn't have done, but we did anyhow, you know. So this poem is called Young St. Louis Days. During those jettison days of, you know, smooth skin, bright eyes turning new imagination, looping days spent dunking dreams of becoming great and famous basketball players, popping in 20-foot rainbowing jump shots, banking in clotheslining two-pointers, cutting back on real grass then for touchdowns, leaning into ears of brick house stallion shooting. We fired tongues hot as lava, fished for love, words steaming, water coughed up, poo-pooing those skint back days locked now in emerging blues. Roy Rogers and Tom Mix riding static skies of television screens. Then Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, howdy doody, cracked our faces into cheese, split our sighs with hysterical laughter, sewn into eyes bright as diamonds, moonlighting on our iced idols' fingers as new keys. We sought to understand needs we thought were real, but never quite understood the meaning of Cadillacs creased into our lives. Then, as symbols of pimps, we imitate even now, and who we then thought we really were, fantasies dominating dreams. So we turned our spirits inside out like pockets wagging, tongues of dogs lolling under sun-stricken August heat, wagging tails of language, groping for syllables, ancestral half-remembered vowels, rolling over forgotten consonants, gliding into confused speech, brokered pig Latin communicated through mask, veiling all meanings even from ourselves. We grew into characters sliding from words no one knew the meaning of, weaving new blues beneath American skies, eyes locked to that $50 gold piece some call the sun, our lives on the run like outlaws, speeding towards something hidden beneath those blues, what the old black men sung of, our lives spending time with rumors of freedom. We thought we already had that. Hung around corners, wooing players of cooing feather touch glide, lean and tonguing players of the slippery slide glances, slide, slip, and fly off into Scooby-Doo, doo-wopping language, rhythm taking us away until we really moved away from ourselves, fading and dying within ghoulish tragedies, integrating toilet stews, roaches, their lives, stiff legs, stiff with death, falling into our lives from everywhere we turn, perfume with disinfectant light, growing riots of furniture inside Halloween trickster tenements that remind of tombstones. We weaved our imaginations through wheezing sunsets, anchored to blues, rivers swallowing skies. We threw our eyes into fishing for new dreams. We listened for the death of innocence coming and falling like light down the night. And so those jettison days of snapping shut rat traps have ran away from us now, like stale breath Wine old dreams, memories of dying friends, sucking up air like beached fish dropped into twilight intervals, river stroke skies, dreams fishing for what we knew was there, hip then, beyond our knowing, under rat trapping skies, jettisoned smooth skin then, glowing, bright penny eyes, turning elliptical, new tongues, wrapping hot as lava rivers, dreams turning then, imagination burning fast touchdowns, running for daylight on real grass, love words whispered into ears of brick house stallions, Kukla, Fran, and Ollie, wagging, lolling tongues of language, hip beyond our knowing then, those days gone like those old blues, those old black men sung of, gone now, falling down the night like shooting light, gone now, sure than shit, flushed down toilet stews, those days and nights, necessary flight, like memory, light, across perpetual darkness. I want to change up a little bit, and I want to read a couple of more, and I would like to read a part of my novel because it's set in St. Louis, and I don't know, but it might take too long. I don't like to read too long, you know, because people don't have long imagination, don't have long. You know what I mean? People be sitting there, oh, get down from that sucker. Anyway, this is trying to break it up a little bit. This is kind of humorous, hopefully. The other brandy sweet night, we was kissing so hard and good, you sucked my tongue right on out my trembling mouth. And I had to sew it back in order to tell you about it. That was meant to be a love poem, you know. It was. We was reaching a little bit, you know. You know, that's what you call reaching, you know. Reaching for it. Okay, I want to read this one. This is kind of snide, or they call black humor. I was riding on the train in New York. Next to this executive, it was these executive people. I was going to a reading on Long Island, and they were looking at me like they thought I was kind of crazy because, you know, they think poets, you know, we be stupid and, you know, that kind of stuff. And they all had their printouts, you know, their printouts, and they all had on their uniforms. They all had their ties, and they had by that time 25,000 martinis, and, you know, so I hadn't had nothing, you know, so anyway. The one who was sitting next to me was particularly foul. So, you know, so I wrote this poem called Memos and Buttons. And I didn't ask him what his name was because I wanted to dedicate it to him because he was so foul. Anyway, so this poem is dedicated to that stranger on the Long Island train going out to Long Island. It's called Memos and Buttons. He couldn't even spell Albuquerque. Had tuna fish garlic breath mixed in with cigarettes and a job way beyond his capacity. He was a bona fide 10 martini man for lunch. Same exact thing during rush hour traffic, going home, walking around with a copper wire for a brain someone was sending Morse code to. He was a modern man of technology, read the Wall Street Journal and Forbes religiously every day. Commuting on suburban trains with spitting images of himself locked in and gigging for Xerox, Texas Instrument, IBM. Hadn't read a deep book in God knows when. Computer printouts being his Bible. Found himself thinking one day of murdering his invalid wife, widowed mother, and three teenage children. He was a modern man of technology. Carried his mind around locked up in a leather briefcase, light to push memos and buttons. I'm going to read this last poem, and then I'm going to read this section from this novel. And this one is for my good friend Richard Franklin, who's here, because we used to play basketball. It's not about him, but it's dedicated to him and Donnell Reed. The poem, we were all basketball players, and I could never write a basketball poem. It used to really pain me, you know, that I could never write a basketball poem. So when I saw Magic Johnson, I wrote a basketball poem.
So this poem is actually for Magic Johnson, dedicated for Magic Johnson and Donnell Reed and Richard Franklin, a poem for Magic. And the poem is trying to approximate what you do on the floor, you know, when you play, if you can play, if you know what the game is, you know. Somebody said the other night, I was at some place, and he said, yeah, man, they think we couldn't play basketball. He said, well, that was just 30 pounds ago. You know, 30 pounds ago. You don't know it was just 30 pounds ago that we could do it. Okay. This is for Magic. Take it to the hoop, Magic Johnson. Take the ball dazzling down the open lane. Herk and jerk and raise your 6'9" frame into air-sweating screams of your neon name. Magic Johnson, nicknamed Windex way back in high school, 'cause you wipe glass backboard so clean. Where you first juked and shook, wild your way to glory, a new style fusion of shake and bake energy, using everything possible, you created your own space to fly through. Any moment now, we expect your wings to spread feathers for that spooky takeoff of yours. Then shake and glide till you hammer home a clotheslining deuce off glass now. Come back down with a reverse hoodoo gem off the spin. Stick it in sweet popping nets clean from 20 feet right side. So put the ball on the floor. Magic, slide the dribble behind your back. Ease it deftly between your bony, stark legs, head bobbing ever which way, up and down. You see everything on the court, off the high yo-yo patter, stop-and-go dribble. You shoot a threading needle rope pass, sweet home to Kareem, cutting through the lane. His skyhook pops cars now, lead the fast break, hit Jamal on the fly. Now blindside a behind-the-back pin-part pass for two more, off the fake. Looking the other way, you raise off balance into tense space, sweating chance of your name. Turn 360 degrees on the move, your legs scissoring space like a swimmer's yo-yoing motion in deep water. Stretching out now towards free flight, you double pump through human trees, hang in place, slip the ball into your left hand, then deal it like a Las Vegas card shuffler off glass into nets, living up to your singular nickname so bad you cartwheel the crowd towards frenzy, wearing now your electric smile, neon as your name. In victory, we suddenly sense your glorious uplift, your urgent need to be champion. And so we cheer, rejoicing with you for this quicksilver, quicksilver, quicksilver moment of fame. So put the ball on the floor again, Magic. Juke and dazzle. Shake and bake down the lane. Take the sucker to the hoop, Magic Johnson. Recreate reverse hoodoo gems off the spin. Deal alley-oop dunk-a-thon. Magician passes now. Double pump, scissor, vamp through space, hang in place, and put it all in the sucker's face. Magic Johnson, deal the round ball like the juju man that you am, like the shown-up shaman man that you am. Magic, like the shown-up spaceman you am. Now I'm going to read this first chapter of this novel, and this novel will be published next year, and it's entitled The Footmans. I'll tell you a little bit about it. The name of the novel is The Footmans, and it's set in St. Louis. It begins in 1968, and it goes back to 1823, and it ends in 1968. The Footman family is a black family that came up from Georgia. And there's the Mocatello family, which is a white family, which came over from England. And the first man is William Tell Mocatello, P.P., P.P. Jr., and P.P. the third. And so, you know, it's a kind of a mystery comic novel about the United States and where people get their money from, and what should have happened, and some other things. And the central image in the novel is the 1917 riot that happened in East St. Louis. So I think that's about all you need to know, because I'm just going to read one chapter. It's 21 chapters, and it's in three parts. When Charlie Footman first saw the young black man with the shaggy full tree of a beard rising swiftly from his second row seat in the Regal Theater on that hot and humid and close August evening in 1968, and silently and carefully cocking and aiming a .44 pistol at him,
He had flashed back quickly his memory film to the frame which held the time and way his father had died during a race riot shootout with a redneck lynch mob back in 1917. Eyewitness accounts of that East St. Louis shootout had added that his father had gone down home in a hail of machete-ripping bullets with dignity, a credit to the race, but a dead credit nonetheless. Some old-time black folks in East St. Louis had told the story of how Woolly Footman had wanted to leave a legacy of black manhood that didn't take no shit from anyone for his 8 growing sons to grow up on. But these accounts always seem to come from Willie Footman's friends. Others, and for one reason or another, thought the reason for Willie's act of kamikaze, of charging into that dark, raging mob of 400 heavily armed apple pie symbols of white American manhood, and armed himself only with a razor blade in one hand, a .22 pistol in the other, and an axe fixed in his belt loop, was because of his country's denial of letting him enlist to help fight the First World War to save the world for democracy. Still others, and they were in the majority, had thought Willie's act to be the ultimate heights of stupidity and not in keeping with a black lifestyle that rejected senseless acts of this kind in those days and which never ever proved anything anyway, anyhow, except that one could die, which everyone and his mama knew anyway. And so the reason why Willie did choose to die in this manner had always remained somewhat of a mystery. But no one ever denied his memory the fact of courage, and even while they thought of him as suicidal and stupid and privately told jokes about him, but never in front of members of his family's faces, they was bad. That was how the saying of "don't go down like Willie" came to be born. That was how the saying of "don't go down like Willie" came to be born in that dark packing house city on the Mississippi River. The saying was used whenever anyone black was trying to give someone else black some advice against some stupid act or another on both sides of the river. White folks had been totally puzzled by Willie's act and had looked upon it at first with distrust, horror, and fear, thinking possibly it might have been the tip of an iceberg beginning of an insurrection by some of their darky slaves. So they took the additional steps of lynching and killing 175 more black folks just for good measure and to prove a point and to keep everything status quo. Some blacks were hung from lampposts. Some were slaughtered in the streets by police and National Guards who were brought in under the pretext of upholding the law. Others, entire families, were burned alive in their homes by rampaging mobs who roamed the streets in search of black blood. Only 13 whites died during this savage episode, and half of these deaths were the result of panic and mistaken shooting. And the 7 whites that did die when some black folks had had enough and fought back with courage to save their families and their own lives, these 7 white people, according to one new local paper, were brutally murdered by black savages. But finally, after all the carnage was over and nothing else happened, white folks in and around East St. Louis came to think of Willie as the cause of it all and made him the scapegoat for their own guilt. But they also came to think of him as being a very crazy nigger. And from that day on and on both sides of the river, they looked closely for the same signs in any one or all of his 8 sons. Craziness in black folks sometimes made white folks respect them more than those days. This is what happened with the Footman boys. White people began to treat them a whole lot different from the way they treated other black folks. This caused East St. Louis black folks and St. Louis black folks later, after the Footmans had moved over there, to extend a great deal of respect to Willie Footman's sons. And despite the fact that they thought Willie crazy or stupid or both, because of the special way they saw how white people treated them. This is one of the main reasons why the Footman boys found it so easy to climb to dizzying heights of power in St. Louis later, and why now, and perhaps because he had acquired such immense power for a black man, Charlie Footman, the next to the youngest boy, found himself staring down the barrel of a snake-eyed .44, wondering whether this was indeed the time he was finally going to make that fabled trip to shake hands with his maker. Charlie was thinking fast now as he stared down the hole of that 44. And as he looked down the dark tunnel of that gun, which held perhaps the hieroglyphics of his future, he watched the film that was his life flashing before him. Everything seemed to slow down.